Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson. It is Monday. Wherever you are, I hope you got blue skies and nice weather. It's muggy in middle Georgia. The phone number, if you would like to be a part of this program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I hate to start like, well, I don't hate to start like this. It needs to be said. And credit where it's due, my buddy Patrick texted me this weekend. And he said, essentially, summarized, everybody's out there saying never forget about 9/11. Aren't critical race theory and Black Lives Matter proof that we have forgotten? And I've thought about that since he texted me. And I think that's right. There was a professor at an Ivy League university. I don't even remember her name now. Her name's not the point. Her tweet was. She tweeted, she got a blue check mark, and she tweeted that really 9/11 was about disrupting the capitalist heteropatriarchy of America. Someone, an academic, a PhD, someone who teaches and indoctrinates the children of America, actually said 9/11 was about disrupting the capitalistic heteropatriarchy of America. There are a lot of hot takes you can make, and we can show some grace, but it needs to be pointed out that for all the people say never forget and remembering 9/11, we are 20 years removed, more divided than we were before 9/11, in large part because of the aftermath of 9/11, the psychological toll and all of that. But at the same time, you got a lot of people who are really upset with George W. Bush and his speech the other day. I choose to give him grace on this. He's talking about domestic extremists and foreign extremists and that they are children of the same foul spirit, he said. And, oh, he's talking about Trump voters. It's amazing. So the media that no one trusts comes out and says, well, he's clearly talking about Trump voters. And you got Trump voters. Oh, he's talking about us. The media told me he was talking about us. You don't trust the media. Maybe he was talking about the white supremacist who marched in Charlottesville. Who, I thought it was a fine speech. It's amazing how people internalize this grievance culture now. Everybody's so thin-skinned. He's clearly talking about me and my friends. I don't know that he was talking about you and your friends. I think he was probably talking about the people who were trying to smash through the door of the speaker's lobby to get to the members of Congress who in the security video you could see fleeing from the scene. But are you one of those people? Then he wasn't talking about you. But we are definitely more divided than we've ever been. And I would say for the media fixated on January 6th is as bad as 9/11. I didn't see people jumping out of windows to their assured death on January 6th. I didn't see the Capitol building in flames, which is what would have happened more likely than not on September 11th had they not crashed Flight 93. Americans rallied then. And you know, here's the thing. Gets to the larger point. On September 11th, 2001, we were all Americans. We weren't Black Americans. We weren't Asian Americans. We weren't Hispanic Americans. We weren't Latino Americans. We weren't Latinx Americans. We weren't gay Americans, straight Americans, transgender Americans, white Americans, Caucasian Americans, Euro Americans, whatever the hell you want to say. We were Americans. We did not have Black firefighters charging up the steps inside the World Trade Center to their deaths saying, oh, I'm not rescuing the white people because they're part of the capitalistic heteropatriarchy. Or any of the firefighters say, well, we're not going in there because it's all a bunch of finance companies who are profiteering off the poor. We might as well let them die. We didn't have any of that. We would today. If some had their way, at least we would. Thankfully, most Americans aren't like that, so we really wouldn't. But there sure is an effort to divide us now that did not exist back then. And it's across the board. I'm not just talking about the Democrats and progressives. There are plenty of Republicans out there as well who believe that we need to slice and dice people into defined categories and try to put some people together to try to go charge. We rarely do we have conversations just as Americans these days. Well, let's talk as Americans. as Americans, I believe we're the last best hope for mankind. And I don't just say that because I'm an American. As I've said before, I've traveled the world. We really are. As an American, I think that everyone has great opportunity in this country to succeed if they just apply hard work. Now, interestingly enough, Black Americans agree with that statement. The people least likely to agree with that statement are rich, white progressives. Black Americans and Hispanic Americans are much more likely to believe that through their hard work, they can succeed in this country than rich, white Americans believe not about themselves, but about those Black and Hispanic people. Says more about the white people than it does the Black and Hispanic people. I believe that through hard work and good character, you can succeed in this country. Now, not always, not everyone, but that exception does not disprove the rule. And yet so many people want to focus on the exception and ignore the rule. They want to make the exception the rule. Welcome to postmodernity. I have seen in this past year Americans smashing debt through the glass of small businesses and burning them down in the name of social justice, ironically. And I have seen the American media give them a pass, excuse them, or tell you not to believe your lying eyes. I have seen the politicians turn on the police. The heroes of 9/11 with the firefighters, the police. And now politicians can so easily and so willingly do scapegoat them. I've seen it. You've seen it. In a post-9/11 America, we should have found a way to come together, but various politicians decided they needed to exploit it to win. The Democrats specifically went after, they gave George W. Bush about a year and then started doing everything they could to undermine him. They ran John Kerry in 2004, Mr. Flip-Flop, Mr. Waffle. It didn't work. But by then they were like, 9/11, that's George Bush's problem, not our problem. They wanted John McCain. They propped up John McCain. They got John McCain in 2008. And then the same members of the media who always wanted John McCain turned on him and stabbed him in the back. And it all became political. And now we're at a point where our teachers, many of them in public schools, openly talk about how, yeah, education is political. And we need your kids to know about transgenderism. And we need your kids to know about the white heteropatriarchy of America that oppresses people, and we need them to be woke. Wokeism isn't selling to people. You know, the firefighters who rushed in on 9/11, the pilots or the people who were on Flight 93, they weren't woke. They were Americans. Can you imagine the wokes on Flight 93? Well, this has been an oppressed minority. We have done bad in the world. Not sure we need to take charge here. That if we crash the plane, think of the environmental damage. Passengers on Flight 93 were not woke. They were concerned with the United States. They were concerned with the welfare of their fellow men. They were willing to die so the rest of us would not. They didn't worry about the isms and the categories of intersectionality. I think my friend Patrick kind of has a point. Critical race theory and Black Lives Matter kind of give proof to the fact that we are not united and have forgotten the lessons of 9/11. So what were the lessons of 9/11? The lessons of 9/11, and again, this goes back to George W. Bush's speech this weekend. Heroes are made from the average man on the street who rises to the occasion when others do not. And there are lots of those in this country who rose to the occasion, many of whom lost their lives on 9/11. And those sorts of people still exist in this country. And it's one reason why critical race theory comes for us here and tries to tell them they are not good or brave, nor should they act, because to act is an act of oppression. It's almost like the demonic is among us, the spiritual collapse of the country, where we could shame people who would rise up and do the right thing. One of the lessons of 9/11 was that the heroes are here. We don't know who they are. There's no crisis to which they must yet respond. But when the crisis comes, they will rise up. We will find out who they are. Another is that there is real evil in the world, and evil, and you got to pay attention to this one more than any other. There is real evil, and it's not your neighbor who sees the world differently than you. It's not the Democrat. It's not even the progressive. You may not like it. You may think they want to upend the country. It's not even the academic who doesn't like you and believes the whole heteropatriarchy nonsense. They're not really evil. They're foolish. They're sinful. They're prideful. They're not evil. Evil exists. And we, as a society, across the political spectrum, we have defined down what evil is. We saw evil on 9/11. There's a concerted effort right now in the media to make January 6th synonymous and tied to 9/11 and say that's the same. There were no burning buildings, crumbling buildings, dying bodies on January 6th. But the media can't get over itself. There were real lessons on 9/11. And now seeing people marching through the streets, burning things down. You know, we as a country, we're not a perfect country. There is no perfect country till eternity. There's no perfect country. We're not a perfect people. We're good people. We're not a perfect people. We could be a great people again if we chose to be. But a lot of us, we've gotten so self-absorbed these days, we choose not to be great. The media, of course, itself has become so narcissistic. It views itself as the hero on 9/11. I kid you not. David Bowder at the Associated Press actually claims that the reporters, the news anchors, were the moral authority of the day. That they were in some ways the moral authority. That they were the leaders. They weren't. They were the witnesses for us. The media has allowed itself the arrogance to put itself in position to be what it was not, to claim what it was not, to perform in ways it was never meant to perform. The media, you know, we got all these conspiracy theories in the nation these days about the vaccine, about the election, about you name it. The media's loss of trust from the public has in large part allowed us to get to the point where the conspiracies could thrive because no one trusts the media anymore. We all largely trusted the media on September 11th, 2001. Yes, there were biases. Yes, they were liberal. Yes, they were more and more open about it. But you could still get the basic news, the who, what, where, when. You may quibble about the why, you may quibble about the how, but the who, what, where, when, we could get them from the media. Now you can't even get that unless it fits the preferred narrative. And now you've got the President of the United States refusing to offer the carrot to get a vaccine, decides to use the stick. Decides to mandate the vaccine, and it's not going to help. It's not going to work. Delta Airlines says only 20% of its employees who were unvaccinated decided to go get vaccinated after Delta largely forced them to go get it. Coca-Cola, other companies out there looking at mandates now at the corporate level. Some will, some won't. I don't know about Coke or Home Depot or some of the other big companies where I am here in Atlanta. Some of the others around the country. Microsoft just says it will mandate vaccines. In New York State, a hospital has shut down its maternity ward because so many nurses walked off the job because they didn't want to take the vaccine. Our national leaders have lost their moral authority and trust. The media has lost its moral authority and trust. The academy has lost its moral authority and trust. The average teacher has lost its moral authority and trust. And they are working in concert together to cause the police and the first responders to lose their voices of moral authority. They're working to undermine the people we all rallied to on 9/11. We have forgotten the lessons of 9/11. We will unfortunately one day be reminded of those lessons again when something wicked this way comes again. Maybe instead we should never forget. I wouldn't say I'm a chair snob, but I kind of am a chair snob. Y'all, I sit for 3 hours for radio and then all the writing and stuff I do. I'm in my chair in my office a lot, and I bought one of those super expensive Herman Miller chairs, and I've traded it in for my X chair. The moment I sat down and it began to massage my back, I thought, this is the chair for me. Yes, my chair, my X chair, gives me a massage. It also can heat up It can cool down. It's amazing. The massage, the temperature control, it's designed and made exclusively for the X chair. Once you feel the customized support of its patented dynamic variable lumbar, the DVL, they call it, your back will have never been so happy. What you do, go to xchairerik.com now. That's the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. And I can tell you, as a radio show host who spends a ton of time in my chair, X chair really does have complete comfort. So again, go to xchairerik.com now. Letter X, the word chair, E-R-I-C-K.com for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee, complete comfort. It's xchairerik.com. Take my advice. Get an X chair. The phone number, should you wish to be on this year program, is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. There is some data out there that you should probably know. I'm actually kind of struck by something Don McNeil wrote. Now, y'all know him, even if you don't know him, you know the name. He was the writer, Donald McNeil, at the New York Times, who was fired. He was their science writer. And he took a class of privileged white high school kids to Central America on a travel trip by the New York Times that rich parents were sending their kids on so they could claim something that distinguished them to get into college. And McNeil used the N-word. Now, he didn't use the N-word as a pejorative. He didn't use it in casual conversation. A student accused another student of using the N-word, and McNeil sought to investigate the truth of the matter asserted, and so asked if the kid used the N-word, and he did not say N-word. He said the actual word, and the result was Donald McNeil got fired for uttering the N-word. I am not making that up. It sounds like the guy is on the spectrum, frankly, and he didn't deal well with his colleagues, and the young wokes at the New York Times didn't like him, and so they pushed him out. But his writing is essential science writing, and he writes with a clarity others don't, and I want to read you three sentences he wrote. Three sentences. In this country, 99% of COVID deaths are now among the unvaccinated. Data doesn't get more convincing than that. Death has a false positive rate of zero. Now, that was, he actually wrote that last month. The data has changed a little bit with the rise and growth and spread of the Delta variant, but not by a whole lot. Let me put this in perspective. The New York Times, of all things, actually does have a pretty helpful chart with the data across the nation as to death rate. So, for example, in Georgia, where I am, an unvaccinated person is 87 times more likely to die than a vaccinated person. An unvaccinated person is 161 times more likely to be hospitalized than a vaccinated person. And it's kind of, now some states, because of the vaccination rates and the lack of spread, it's different. So, for example, in Indiana, you have a 7 times more likely chance of dying if you're unvaccinated than vaccinated. But that's in large part because they don't have a lot of people dying either way. In another state, let's do New York. Where is New York? New York is not on their list here. New Jersey, 126 times more likely to be hospitalized if you're unvaccinated than vaccinated, 50 times more likely to die. It's staggering, staggering numbers here on just the proof. Oh, this is why they did New York. So in New York, it's about 50 times more likely to die if you're unvaccinated. The data is remarkable on the efficacy of the vaccines, but there's a problem for the Democrats here. The Democratic base turns out, not the Trump base, the Democratic base turns out to be disproportionately inclined not to get vaccinated. 54% of Americans 18 to 34, the demographic most likely to vote Democrat, say it's an unacceptable infringement to do a vaccine mandate. 43% of black voters and 37% of Hispanic voters are opposed to vaccine mandates. And in fact, a lot of younger people are refusing to get vaccinated. In New York, as I've mentioned, a hospital has had to shut down its maternity ward because the young nurses aren't getting vaccinated and they're quitting their jobs instead. It's causing a healthcare crisis by forcing people to get vaccinated. Maybe the Democrats should have thought about all that. I told y'all it was going to happen. Hello there, it is Eric Erickson. The phone number, should you wish to be on this program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I wish to play you a bunch of audio. There is a point of me playing you a bunch of audio. And just bear with me on the series of bits of audio. We begin with a reporter from the New York Times.
So the governor can try to go to the gates of hell, but in fact, legal experts tell me that the president is in a pretty solid legal ground. He is citing the law that established OSHA. So you know that if you have a factory, let's say, where you're exposing people to toxic fumes and it's going to kill them, OSHA can come in and give you a citation. And they can give you a, you know, if you are really a severe violator, they can take you to court. So the Biden administration is making the same case that this is a threat to workplace safety. And that's the ground that this law or this mandate will be fought on. A lot of Republican governors are screaming about it's unconstitutional, it's this or that. It's really a case of federal law. And experts say Biden has the authority in federal law to do exactly what he did.
Don't you love the experts say, we don't know who the experts are, but the experts say it. The experts said Donald Trump would start a war by moving the U.S. embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. The experts said he would start a war by killing Qasem Soleimani. The experts said Joe Biden could get us out of Afghanistan without any problems. The experts say, yeah, here's Pete Ricketts, governor of Nebraska.
It should be a personal health care choice. This is not something that the government should mandate. And somebody shouldn't have to make the choice between keeping their job and getting a jab in the arm. I mean, it's just wrong. I've talked to people, a number of people who have told me if they make me take the vaccine, I'm just going to be fired. I'm not going to do it.
That's Pete Ricketts. Now, this is a professor on MSNBC talking about Joe Biden in Texas.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple things we have to keep in mind. First, Catholic moral teaching teaches that abortion is a sin and therefore is murder. But that's their doctrinal and ideological position. Biblically, it doesn't say anything about abortion is a sin or murder. Anyone who teaches differently is not telling the truth. Even though he is
right,
contradicting the teaching of his faith biblically, which is supposed to be the most important thing, he's on firm ground. But not only that, he's taken an oath to defend the Constitution, and the Constitution, particularly the 13th Amendment, said that no one has the right to enslave anyone else's body.
All right, we can just stop with this idiot, but you get the point. And here's Bernie Sanders. Trust me, playing a series of unrelated audio. They all got a point.
No, it is absolutely not acceptable to me. I don't think it's acceptable to the president, to the American people, or to the overwhelming majority of the people in the Democratic caucus. Look, we worked with Senator Manchin to pass the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, which was enormously consequential and helpful to working class families in getting us out of the economic disaster that befell us as a result of COVID.
That was Bernie Sanders. I'm not playing the full clip. Here's Chris Christie on This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
Let's remember that the politicization of these vaccines started back in the presidential campaign. It was started by Vice President Harris, you know, who said that I will not take a vaccine that's approved by Trump or by Trump's regulators. That put this in a totally different area that allowed it to be politicized, and that politicization is continuing now.
He's not wrong, by the way. He's not wrong. He's telling the truth there, and people got mad at him for pointing that out. So I have played for you a clip of Pete Ricketts, governor of Nebraska, on the Sunday shows, opposed to vaccine mandates, a New York Times reporter citing supposed experts who say the vaccine mandate is legal, Some idiot on MSNBC saying that Joe Biden is right to defend abortion, even though he's defying the Catholic Church, because the Catholic Church is actually wrong because there's nothing in the Bible to say otherwise. Yeah. Bernie Sanders is talking about the infrastructure deal and opposed to Joe Manchin's opposition to it. Chris Christie talking about Kamala Harris and her opposition to the vaccines when Donald Trump was in charge. You know what people are missing? What's not really being talked about off of Fox News? It's not really a topic of conversation anywhere except on Fox News. Afghanistan. Here's Barack Obama's CIA director.
The Taliban winning the war in Afghanistan, and then the way our exit happened, has absolutely inspired jihadists all over the world. The Taliban is saying, we just didn't defeat the United States. We defeated NATO. We defeated the world's greatest military power ever. So there's a celebration going on. We defeated the Soviet Union, then it fell. Now we've defeated NATO, right? Maybe they can fall too. I think not only will jihadists be inspired, but a lot of them are going to come to Afghanistan to be part of the celebration, to be part of Jihadist Central. So after 9/11, they all scattered from Afghanistan. I think we're going to see a flow back in, and that's one of the things that makes Afghanistan more dangerous than other spots on the planet.
And here's Jen Wilson on Fox News.
Well, I mean, we haven't moved on. We've been working, you know, 48-hour shifts with no sleep, literally with no sleep. I mean, we've basically had to roll up a private airline and a travel agency in the span of 3 weeks because we have over 20,000 requests for evacuation just through our website alone. And that's Americans, that's green card holders, that's NATO passport holders. There are I can't even count how many pregnant females that we're trying to evacuate. It's definitely not over. And you know, we've had to roll it up and fund it.
We're not talking about Afghanistan. Well, we're talking about Afghanistan. The media is not talking about Afghanistan, and the situation there continues to destabilize. And that's largely the point here. The media is seriously collapsing. And in its obligation to cover real current events, the OSHA regulation, we're going to have people on about the OSHA regulation. In fact, Todd Stafford is going to join me an hour from now in the second hour of this program. His law firm specializes in fighting OSHA. We're going to get into the nitty gritty of the vaccine mandate, but the media is using these things to willfully avoid having to talk about Afghanistan. You are the acting director of the CIA for Barack Obama on television this weekend. His name is Michael Morrell, and he is saying that Afghanistan is even worse now, that we're going to see a level of jihadist extremism coming from Afghanistan. We're going to see this. And by the way, I think there's truth there. Legitimately, this is a situation that we can't let go of, even as the media decides to move on. Now, part of this is not intentional in the case of the media. You do need to understand that. Part of it's not intentional. A lot of it is their attention span. Members of the media like to move on to the current hotness. Afghanistan, they spent multiple weeks on it. It is no longer the current hotness. It's still a problem. There are still issues there. There are still Americans there. It was kind of striking this weekend. Joe Biden did his best not to talk to the public at 9/11 celebrations, other than that one time pulling down his mask and yelling at people. But it's kind of hard for Joe Biden to say we should never forget 9/11 when he's forgotten Americans stranded in Afghanistan, but that's where we are. That's the situation. But the media, of course, has moved on to the vaccine mandate. They've moved on to the budget fight, the infrastructure fight, all of these things, the pressing fights. They get bored with this. It's not simply they want to help Joe Biden, but that's part of it. It's also their attention span is very short, and they've moved on. And that's part of the serious problem we've got as a nation right now, is that we are losing focus on the really important things for the not necessarily important things, because those not necessarily important things are the things that we choose to focus on. On September 10th, I interviewed Robin Walensky. She was the Associated Press reporter at the bottom of the World Trade Center who saw the second plane hit. And Robin Lewinsky made the point that for 8 years after the 93 bombing at the World Trade Center, in a cave in Afghanistan, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, they waited us out while we were obsessed with the Clinton, with the Republican takeover of Congress, the Clinton impeachment, the Princess Diana funeral, all of these distractions. They were like the velociraptors in Jurassic Park probing the cage, seeing if the electricity was still there, trying to find a weakness to get out. And they found it. And we were completely distracted, and we are rapidly heading into an age of distraction again about rather inconsequential things in the grand scheme of things. They're monumental for us right now. The vaccine mandate in the here and now is a big thing. I get that. But in the grand scheme of things, if terrorists want to kill you and your children, it's not as big a deal. And we're going to get distracted by the small things. And the media in particular is going to lose all focus on Afghanistan, even as Al-Qaeda is there trying to rebuild. Now, to the phones we go on this particular issue. Let's go to the phones. Monica, I want to go to you first today, if I can fire you up here. Let's see. Why is my phone button not working here? I have no idea. Monica, you will have to give me a minute because I do want to talk about this issue. And how do we keep the heat on Joe Biden and on the press and get them to focus on these things? All right, Monica, I've got you queued up. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric. I'm so glad that you're talking about this. I've been thinking about this for the last week. I usually listen to Fox. Of course, I listen to you. And I find myself turning on CNN, turning on MSNBC, turning on ABC, because I wanted to see, are they talking about it as well? And as you said, and I think you're being a little bit more kind, I'm more cynical about it. I think they, if it were reversed and if this were Trump in office, they wouldn't be turning the page too soon. But I don't have to tell you any of that. My question really was more so, you know, it seems like the other side is so ready to protest. And there is nothing wrong with that. Peaceful protests all day long. But our conservative side, we never seem to do anything. And I want to do something, whether it's, you know, where can I donate money that would actually do something to help? You hear these veterans organizations that are going into Afghanistan to try and rescue these people. I think it's horrific that we've left these people there and that this government isn't, I think it's just criminal, evil, and I want to be able to do something to help. If there were a peaceful protest, I'd be there. And I'm not the type to normally do that. Do you have any advice, recommendations?
You know, yes, I do. One of which is that we've got to be focused on still trying to help people get out. I'm a big fan of Help the Persecuted. They're trying to get people out. Samaritan's Purse is trying to get people out. The Nazarene Fund is trying to get people out. There are a number of first responder organizations whose names escape me at the moment that are trying to help people get out. And donating to those are good. But, you know, I will also tell you this. One thing that I think everybody's got to keep in mind here is that now really is the time to get involved in the political process. Because midterm elections are coming, whether we want them to come or not, they're coming. And now is the time to start looking at candidates and seeing who is the best at conveying a message to hold Joe Biden accountable for this. And oftentimes right now you got the candidates who are star-studded, who are rising, who are getting a lot of focus. Maybe they're not the best candidate. Maybe they are. But it's time to use some discernment on who's the best candidate moving forward and then support that candidate and go to the mats for that candidate to hold Joe Biden accountable for what he's done, to hold the Democrats accountable for what they've done. We will not get answers. We will not get investigations until such time as the Republicans take back Congress. So now is the time to start helping them lay the groundwork to take back the House and the Senate in 2022 so we can keep the pressure on Joe Biden about Afghanistan and what happened. Now, what happened to you guys? Some of you did not get engaged enough and order your Eden Pure Thunderstorms last week, and you should have to clean the air because, you know, you were using the smoker and the fryer and stuff this weekend with the beginning of the NFL, so now you got to get rid of the odors in your house. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm takes care of it. It eliminates. It doesn't mask. It eliminates the odors, and it's filterless. You just wipe it out every once in a while. They really work too. We use them in the kitchen when we're frying. So the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, you can hold it in your hand, you can plug it into the wall, you can use a USB cord, you can plug it into your car, you can plug it in your RV. And right now you can get three of them and save $200 and get free shipping by going to EdenPureDeals.com. You will see my name, Eric Erickson. You click on my name, get the three save $200 package, put it in your shopping cart. At checkout, you'll see a little box. It says discount code, checkout code, and you put in Eric3, E-R-I-C-K, and the number 3, and you will get $200 off a 3-pack, one for your upstairs, one for your downstairs, one for your basement, wherever you need it. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. At checkout, put in the code Eric3. Save some money and clean the air in your house with the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Hello there. It's Eric. The phone number, 877-973-7425. To the phones we go. Jerry, you are going to be up next on the Eric Erickson Show. Welcome.
Hey, Eric, thanks. Hey, real quickly, I think we need to stop here, and we all need to define the word unified or unification, because I think the left's definition is shut up and do as we say, and the other half of the country's definition couldn't be further opposite from that if we tried. And so I think people are just jumping on Bush's speech this past weekend when he used that word over and over. And the definitions, unfortunately, are just completely different and opposite. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Jerry, listen, I appreciate that. And I think that the real situation here with the left is, yes, as you said, we're not unified unless we're my way or their highway. They want us to do exactly what they say. And I certainly don't take Bush's criticisms angstily as some have, and attacking as some have. I actually thought he made a very good speech. My concern overall, however, is yes, the left wants us to do exactly what they demand and consider us not unified unless we do it. Now, my personal view on unity is that we agree to disagree on the public policies designed to improve America, but we find unity in agreeing that the world needs us. And part of the problem we have right now is that we're not united on the idea of the world needing us. I realize people are tired. The sleeping giant is ready to go back to sleep, and we feel like we're policing the world. I don't really think we're policing the world so much as we are the protector of the Western order. And if you want to protect the Western order from China, from Russia, from Iran, from the terrorists, then the United States has to stand strong on the world stage. Joe Biden has no intention of doing that. You know, over the weekend, his team kept him as best they could from speaking to reporters about 9/11. And when he finally was able to walk over and they tried to pull him away, but he walked over and talked to some, he's like, what, we can't be everywhere. We can't do stuff around the world. We can't go invading countries where Al-Qaeda is. Well, what's our strategy then, Joe? How are we going to keep ourselves safe? I don't think he has one.